This is Morgan Morgan with the Navigating It podcast, where we bring on guests to inspire you with their stories and help you figure out how to navigate this crazy thing we call life. So please settle in and let's get to it. This next episode is really special to me. I get to interview my Uncle Andy, and we get to talk about what life has been like for him with stage 4 cancer. He was diagnosed a little over 3 years ago. We do get a little bit into faith. It's not a lot, but I didn't want anyone to think that we are trying to impose any of our beliefs on anyone else, but it is part of his journey, and it does come up in conversation. So I just wanted to put that out there before we get started. And then we also recorded this over Zoom, so it does get a little choppy here and there, but bear with us. Thanks so much, and I hope you enjoy. Hi, Uncle Andy. How are you doing?
I'm doing swell. How about you, Morgan?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being willing to talk to me today. I really appreciate it.
It's an honor.
I was just wondering if you could start out by talking about who you are and what you were doing for your career and where were you were at before your diagnosis.
I am Morgan's uncle. I'm married to Morgan's aunt. So my name is Andy Leshak, and I live in Superior. And I was born and raised in Superior and moved away to go to school and moved back about 20 years after I left and raised a family here in Superior with my wife, Sarah. We raised two children, a daughter, Hannah, and a son, Thomas. And while I was here, my last position was as county administrator for Douglas County, Wisconsin. And that entailed overseeing the operations of county government and approximately 300 employees, about 24 different departments. And I reported to a county board of 21 members. So that's what I was doing.
Did you enjoy your career? Was that something you always wanted to do?
You know, I don't think I ever planned on the county administrator position. But this work that I did leading up to that helped me to prepare for that position. And when that position became available and I applied for it, fortunately, I was able to succeed in my application and I was hired. But yeah, I've enjoyed that job. I've enjoyed almost, I think I've enjoyed every job that I've ever had.
Were you just really good at choosing those jobs, or how did you find jobs that you really enjoyed through your life?
I think the thing that made jobs fun and fulfilling was not so much the content of the work, which that was important, but it was the people that I got to meet and work with when I've had those positions. So when I look back to even being a dishwasher, one of my first jobs, it wasn't necessarily the work. I mean, washing dishes is washing dishes.
Right.
But the fact that I was able to work with a couple of my friends, and that made it fun. And it made it enjoyable and getting to meet people. So when I look at the jobs that I've had, I think the key part of the job enjoyment and job fulfillment was the fact that I was able to work with people that I enjoyed working with, people who I respected. And I think that was probably it. It really added to a great work environment. And of course, the jobs that I've had have been challenging, which has been good. It's challenged my skill set. Really showing a light not only on my strengths, but also on my weaknesses.
And
so, you know, when you put all that together, when I look back, and that's probably the first time I've expressed it in that way, because I know people had asked you, do you enjoy your job? And I go, you know what? I don't think I've ever had a job that I didn't enjoy. And now I think this is the first time that I realized it wasn't the content of the job, it was because of the people that I worked with. So
That's really cool. Yeah, my favorite jobs that I've had have definitely been, I think my favorite job I've ever had in my life was working at the movie theater, because it was just with all of my friends. And the people who are coming to the movie theater are usually really pleasant because they're excited for the experience. And so I think that's probably a really big reason for me too, as to why I like the jobs that I do have, because it's usually with people. And even the customers that I've had jobs in, like my current job, it's always usually a really good time on our planes just because of the people I get to meet. And I think that's really important too. So when you were in your job, was it 3.5 years ago? Was it you, from what my memory is, that you had like a lump on your neck, and that's the first sign of something was not right?
Yeah, that's correct. And probably, let me see, I left my position. Well, I had a number of days of sick time that I was able to use that bridged me. But when I think I stopped working right around this time 3 years ago. So I think I want to say it was April 17th when I stopped working. That sounds right.
Wow.
I'd have to go back as well. But I was it was probably going back to January of 2000. And let me see if I get the dates right. 2017.
Yeah.
And it was probably, I might have noticed a bump on the right side of my neck before that. But I really, again, I didn't pay too much attention to it. But I know when there was a day when I woke up in the morning and I had some pain coming down my right arm. And I thought I had either pulled a muscle or pinched a nerve, because the day before we had taken down our deer stands. And we go deer hunting and we have to have the deer stands down. If you're on public land, you have to have them down by February.
Right.
So my brother and son and I went out and took our deer stands down. And so the next day I had this pain. It was like a nerve thing in my arm, and I couldn't figure out again if it was a pinched nerve or if I pulled a muscle. Well, I kind of blew that off. And then this thing on my neck was getting bigger. And I remember I was down in Madison for Superior Days, which is a big lobbying event that the community does.
Right.
And I was talking to a person after lunch, and this pain was just shooting down my arm, going all the way to my hand. And I had a hard time concentrating. So I wouldn't have this pain constant, but it would come, you know, I'd get these episodes several times a day. And at this time I'm meeting with this person and this pain is coming down my arm into my hand, and I'm having a hard time concentrating on the conversation. And so this would have been in mid to late February. So after that, I decided I better go and talk to my doctor.
And at that time, were you nervous at all? Or were you just like, oh, this is probably nothing? Or did you have a gut feeling about it?
No, I don't get nervous about things like that. I have an attitude that what's going to happen will happen.
Yeah.
So I really don't get nervous about things like that. So I went in to see my doctor. Excuse me. So he looked at it and he said, well, first let's make sure it's not an infection. And so he provided me with some antibiotics. And he said, I'll probably get into more detail than you need, but gave me 7 days worth of antibiotics. He goes, but if these things don't start working in 5 days, call me right away. So they weren't working, so I called him. And then he went and he had me go see an ears, nose, and throat doctor. I think that was it. And that doctor came in, he looked at it. He said, we need to take a biopsy. And so he took a biopsy, and then he called back and said, you didn't get enough. And so he said, you need to go into another position to get a bigger biopsy, or to be able to extract more tissue.
Yeah.
So they did that. And then in a couple of days he called and basically, and I, at that time, I thought if I have anything, it might be lymphoma was my guess, because it was, you know, lymph nodes are right around in that area, and I'm figuring it's probably lymphoma if it is something. Mm-hmm. So he called, and after the biopsy, he called and, you know, basically told me that they found that it was squamous cell carcinoma. And I asked him to spell that.
I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah, and again, your grandma had, and I've heard it pronounced squamous or squamous, but your grandma, Dorothy, had it on her arm. So it's sort of like a skin, some people consider it a skin type cancer, but in my case, it's part of what's called head and neck cancer. And so he you know, broke the news, and then, you know, after that, they wanted to see how far it had spread. So then I went in for a CAT scan. And then when they saw that, they saw some areas in my chest and in my lungs. They wanted to make sure that they wanted to test that to see if that was cancer. And if it was, it was the same cancer. So, you know, for the first probably 30 days, you know, I was probably in going through, you know, several different tests just to see what cancer I had, A, B, to what extent it had spread, and then C, to determine sort of a treatment for what I had.
And when you heard that news, was it at that time that they knew the extent of it and kind of gave you like a plan of how things might go, or was it really unknown still in like the first days of where things were at and what could potentially happen with having it?
I think that took a little, that took maybe about a week or two. So the first thing was, gosh, if I remember right, first thing was he said, here's what you have. And again, he was an ear, nose, and throat doctor. And then once they discovered the extent, that's when, well, he turned me over to my oncologist. And so my oncologist ordered the scan, the CAT scan. I think there was a couple of other scans they did. And then also, recommended that I have a biopsy done of a little mass in my lungs. And so he did that. And once the results came back from that, then he was able to put together a, you know, basically rule in and rule out, you know, certain treatments.
Right. And was it at that time that, did they basically tell you that this cancer would be terminal for you, or like the stage, was that when you found out about that?
Yeah, because it's, you know, I think that's exactly when you ask the question, you know, what stage is it in? So if it was going to be just located and limited to the neck area, it might just be stage, you know, one or two. Probably stage two, and that's a difference. But once it's spread, that's when I got lost. It became a stage, which really changed, limited the options of treatment. And then I asked the doctor that same question about, is this terminal? And his response was, I don't like to use that word, terminal. And I said, well, what does this mean? And he goes, well, with this type of cancer, stage four, with what you have, the survival rate after 4 years is, I think it was 7%.
Wow.
So the survival rate after 4 years is 7%. But he said he had a patient that had a similar type of cancer, similar staging. And he goes, the last time I saw him, he had been treated for 5 years, and I don't know where he is. You gotta go, why? What happened? He goes, well, no, he just left the area. I haven't been in touch with him. So he says, it really depends. You can't really use these numbers. But then I asked him the question. I go, if you didn't treat, let's say we didn't do any treatment, how long would I have? He said, 6 months.
Wow.
So the stuff could act pretty quickly.
Yeah. And,
but I think, you know, I think 6 months almost becomes a standard answer to all these cancer questions that they ask. Seems like when I talk to other people, yeah, they only gave her 6 months. I think they probably shoot low so that when you go past 6 months, and you know, everyone's a hero.
Right. What was it like hearing that news? When they did tell you the facts of how this could go for you?
I think when I first heard the news that I had cancer, and I was with, it was funny because I got the call at around 4:30. I was with, I think it was a Thursday, and I was taking care of our grandson. And I think I remember telling him that, hey, Papa has cancer. And he doesn't know. He, at that time, he was only two. He wouldn't know what that meant. But I think the toughest part is calling people, you know, because you're, you know, there's this, I don't know, the struggle. You don't want to alarm people, but then you don't want to have people feel like you haven't told them.
Right.
And it's just like, well, why didn't he tell me? And so, of course, I'm going to tell my wife. And I'm better tell the children because you don't want them to hear from someone else. So that, you know, became, you know, trying to, in my mind, trying to figure out who I should tell and when I should tell people. And so I think that was probably the, you know, that was a moment where it was like, you know, you're struggling with, you know, what should I do? And so I think I really erred on the side of, you know, telling as many people that are close to me, so my, you know, Sarah, our children, my mom, my siblings, and then my friends, you know, trying to tell them as quickly as possible.
Right.
So they kind of knew, so they wouldn't hear from. And especially in the position that I had, especially if I was going to have to take a leave of absence or basically leave my job, it was going to get public.
Right.
You know, it's going to get public, and it was going to get public quick. So I had to make sure I informed those folks that were closest to me.
Yeah, because I remember there was a few articles in the newspaper even about what was going on with you just because of the nature of your job and working with the city and overseeing so much of the city or the county, right? But I think it's amazing that in like your first thought was, how am I going to tell my family and friends, and when am I going to tell them? I think that's just amazing to me that that was your first, one of your first thoughts when hearing that news, because I don't know, I feel like I would have immediately just like felt bad for myself or something, but instead you immediately were like, okay, how am I going to tell everyone, and when am I going to do it? And I think that says a lot about who you are as a person.
Well, you know, and again, I think I've been able to see a lot of different folks that have had different struggles, and, you know, where some people ask, you know, why me? You know, I think my response has been, why not me? You know, why should someone else get this and not me? But also, you know, I think when you say that, Morgan, it kind of reminds me of, you know, a mutual friend of ours, Ron King.
Yeah, I love Ron.
When he was diagnosed with cancer, I mean, that's, I think, one of the things that I remember him doing was calling us. And that was probably one of the hardest phone calls that I've ever received. I put it up there with, you know, with my dad getting the phone call that my dad was dying or getting a phone call that my grandfather had died. But I remember where I was when I received that call, you know, from Ron King. And when he said, hey, I got some bad news. And I thought, you know, the sailboat sunk. And he goes, what is it? He goes, I had cancer. I go, well, news. He goes, I got about 6 months to a year to live. I go, holy fuck it. So that was a shock, of course. And you know, I think Ron proved them wrong and lived beyond the 12-month mark.
Yeah.
But he and some of the other folks that were close to me have provided really good role models of, you know, just really good examples, role models in regards to how you handle, and how you play the cards that you're dealt.
Right. And how have you handled the reactions from your family and friends? I know it's been really hard on a lot of everyone, hearing what's going on with you, and everyone's obviously so worried. And how have you dealt with the grief people are going through knowing about your diagnosis?
I think that's probably been I won't say toughest or hardest part, but really, I guess it's been a learning experience for me, is that, although you're the one that has it, you don't go through this alone. And there's a heck of a lot of people that are going through it with you. And I think sometimes I would say it's harder on them than it is on me.
Yeah.
Because they're looking at it from the outside, and I can deal with it from the inside. But I think it's a lot harder. In my case, I think it seems to be a lot harder on them. I mean, because of the unknown, the uncertainty. You know, they're seeing someone that they love, and having a diagnosis that doesn't look really good. You know, I think fortunately, in my case, though, so far, is that the treatments, and I've had several different treatments. I think I'm on my fifth different treatment. The treatments that I've had have been, again, they've been effective up to a point, and the side effects haven't been terrible. So, you know, I'm able to function, you know, to most extent, except, you know, I don't have the energy level, but, you know, I'm not laying in bed. I'm not withering away yet. And I, except for, you know, maybe a, you know, a week right around when I get chemo, where, you know, I could be, you know, basically just have no energy to do anything.
Right.
I've been doing pretty well, and I've been able to do a lot of the stuff that I've wanted to do and spend time with people that I want to spend time with.
So
I think that's the way out.
Has there been anything that you've done that have helped your family members who are struggling with the news?
You know, I think I'm trying to be a little bit more, I'm trying to be a little bit more compassionate, and I'm trying to include them and let them know about what's going on. And I'm trying to kind of bite my tongue and understand that, you know, it's just not my issue. This issue also involves them. So I think that's part of it. In a lot of cases, I'm a pretty closed guy. I don't like to share a lot of emotions or feelings. I don't like to share when things are good or bad.
Right.
You know, just kind of kept stuff to myself. But I think this process has taught me that I think I need to be a little bit more open.
Yeah. And have you seen any changes in the way that people have treated you since finding out what you're going through?
Well, recently people don't want to come near me. I mean, for some reason it seems like people are always staying around 6 feet away from me. I don't understand. No one wants to come over. No one invites me over to their house. I'm to go out drinking with them. I just don't understand. And it just really just started happening in the last, say, month.
I know. I was going to ask you about how COVID has been affecting you, being someone who could be so compromised.
Who's he? Who's COVID? Does he play for the Twins?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so I think in regards to how people – what's funny is at first when you get it, people are very, And I think sometimes they don't know how to react, but you know, it's and I won't say pity. I think a lot of it's compassion. So you get it, you got cancer, but people have been really gracious. People have been very kind. When I first got diagnosed, the number of people that called me, but more importantly, not just as important, they called me, which was really important. I got calls from two governors.
Whoa, that's cool.
I received letters from one of the governors. I received letters and cards from people here locally and people that I've known throughout my working career. And so I just, it's overwhelming the number of cards. I'm thinking back because it's been 3 years, but the number of cards you get and people expressing their, the fact that they're thinking and praying for me, which I thought was really, 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 really nice. And so, you go through that phase where you get that diagnosis and people don't know what's going to happen. They know that stage 4 and they said, oh my God, this is it. And then you have, so you go through that and then, but like I said, Morgan, with the treatment that I've had, it hasn't, the side effects to some extent have been minimal.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people see me, they don't, they say, hey, you look good. And, I might look good and on some days I might feel like I have no energy at all. But my outward appearance really hasn't changed. In fact, I gained weight. And so after 3 or 4 years, I think people are saying, will you die already?
Oh, no.
My God, are you milking this or what?
No.
So I think right now it's like I've had it for so long. I think people just think that might just be maybe just normal.
You're a lucky guy. And I would like to say that you really did start the trend with these medical gloves that everyone is wearing now, because you had to wear them for a while at the beginning. I remember you being at my birthday dinner. You had to wear
I got that pair from the Blue Man Group in Chicago.
You really started the trend there. But how do you want to be treated with having this diagnosis? Like how, in an ideal world, like what would your dream be for people to treat you a certain way?
Oh no, I think like how they're treating me. I think most things haven't changed all, they haven't really all changed all that much. It just, I think that's it. It's funny. One of the things that I've also learned, and this almost goes back to something that a friend of mine said when it came to mourning, my father had passed away, and a buddy of mine whose dad, I believe, had passed away a couple of years prior to my dad. And he said something, and you hear this said a lot now, but he said it to me. He goes, you know what? We all mourn in our own way, and there's no one way of doing it. And I think the same applies to when someone gets cancer, is that no one's situation is going to be exactly the same as another person's.
Right.
People think of it as a battle, as a fight. Some people think they need to engage in a battle and that this is a battle that they're going to win. And winning is defined as being cancer free, which means that the cancer patients that go through it and die, are they losers? Which I don't think they are losers.
No,
so some people paint it that way. Other people, which is fine because, as part of their quote unquote life journey, that's what they decided to do. Other people will take a defeatist role where it's just like, my God, this is the end of my life, and they, for whatever reason, might not have the family and friend network, the support the social support or the faith to be able to get through this this issue. And other people will take a situation and say, you know what, we're going to see how this goes. This is, you know, the prognosis might not be great, but you know what, I'm going to have faith in God. I'm going to have faith in my doctors, and we're going to move forward, and we're going to make this, you know, a great ride for how long this ride lasts.
How have you found peace with your diagnosis? I mean, are you at peace with it? When I see you and I'm around you, you seem so calm and you seem to be in a really good place. And what has been the thing for you that has really helped you find that place?
Alcohol, Morgan. Alcohol. When you see me, I've been drunk on my can. No, I think it's part of my faith. And as a Catholic Christian, this life isn't the end.
Right.
And if you believe that this is just a small part and that there's something beyond our physical lives, something greater, something better, I think then that gives you this hope that, you know, this is a journey. This is a journey that won't end, but it's just really the first stage. And when this stage is over, it'll bring us to another stage, which is grander than the stage that we have right now.
Right. Because my biggest fear in life is death, because it's just the unknown of it that really scares me. And when I see you and how at peace you are, and even when I saw Ron King when I was young, but when I remember seeing him and he seemed very much so at peace with it. And so I really like how you've connected to your faith and how that has really helped you, because that encourages me to get more in touch with my faith. And everyone has different faiths and different ways of looking at things and different gods, but I think that maybe that is really what helps people as you. And so what has been the most challenging experience for you in this? Has it been like helping your family and being more open, or has it been like the side effects you have had from it?
Boy, in a lot of ways, this has been liberating, because it's allowed me to do a lot of stuff that I probably wouldn't have been able to do. And so I've been really fortunate, though, Morgan. I've been fortunate that, you know, I had a great job with excellent benefits. I had, as part of that benefit package, was a great disability, long-term disability insurance benefit, which allows me to go through this treatment and receive disability payments. I have great medical coverage, and your Aunt Sarah works and has a very good job with good benefits, and her healthcare benefits are very good. So a lot of the challenges that other people face when they get a diagnosis like of cancer, and if they have to leave their job, number one, loss of income, number two, potentially loss of medical coverage. And if they're not in a great financial situation to start with, their financial situation can deteriorate kind of quickly. So not only does that person have to deal with the issues of treatment and physical health, but now that person also has to deal with financial consideration. In my case, I haven't really had to deal with the financial part, because again, we've been fortunate. And in regards to healthcare, I haven't had to travel far to get healthcare. I I travel across the bridge.
Right.
You know, from my door to the door of the clinic, it's, you know, 10 to 15 minute drive. And so being able to get healthcare and treatment here in my backyard in a great place with people that are extremely friendly, competent, you know, it's been great. So when you look at the things that I haven't had to worry about, I haven't had to worry about financial stuff. I haven't had to worry about whether or not I have healthcare. I haven't had to worry about traveling and being away in order to get treatment. You remove that stuff. I think you remove a lot of stress that, you know, other people might go through when they have a diagnosis. So with that being said, I've been able to not have to worry about that stuff. But on the other side, on the really, really, that's positive. And then on some additional positive stuff, I've been able to do a lot of travel and hang out with people. Some people that I haven't really been in touch with closely in a long time and have been able to do things with them. So I've been able to spend more time, well, number one, with my family. So I've been able to do things with my wife and with my children. Been able to go to an Orange Bowl down in Miami.
Yeah, you've had a lot of great experiences.
Yeah. So I've been able to do all that. So when I look at that, you know, it's just been positive and I haven't been bored. And again, I haven't been that ill, although I've been hospitalized in the last 12 months. I've been hospitalized 4 times. But that, I think a lot of times was just more of a preventative move to prevent me from getting advanced stages of pneumonia. But,
right.
You know, other than that, and I hadn't even in the hospital, I didn't feel ill. So I've been able to do a lot of stuff. And I think one of the things that you asked about is what's kind of been difficult. I think one of the realizations, one thing that you become aware of is, well, let me see, are you, and you put it too, Morgan, when you talked about fear of dying. Fear of dying because we're not ready.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be one of the biggest things. We're not ready faith-wise. We're not ready because, you know, we haven't done all the stuff that we want to do in this lifetime.
That's one of my biggest things is just like the idea of passing away and missing out on all the experiences with my husband and our puppy Lenny and our family and our friends, and not being there for that is like a part of that fear.
Mm-hmm. And I think what's also tough is that when you do pass, you know, you leave behind a lot of people. And I think that's probably the one thing where that would be tough, is because when you go through this, and as I mentioned before, you know, there's a lot of people going through it with you.
Right.
Is that, you know, the folks you leave behind, are you leaving, you know, there's always that fear that I leave them behind, will I leave them in a poor, typically for a guy, if I leave them behind, are they going to be in a bad financial situation? Mm-hmm. That's usually the first thing that guys think about. And I won't say that, I may have stereotypes, but in my case, it was like, okay, what's their financial situation going to be? Well, fortunately, both of our kids are adults. They're on their own. And then, so I look at, you know, how am I going to leave Sarah? And so you look at that and you say, do you have your financial house in order? And then, you know, you got to also think about their emotional condition too.
Yeah.
You know, you will, for better or for worse, you're leaving a hole in their lives. And so you look at that. And so I think one of the things is you want to spend as much time as you can with them, you know, quality time. And you want to leave them with as many memories as possible. Now, regardless if you have and know this by cancer, or if you get hit by a bus tomorrow.
I know.
These are things that we all have to kind of think about. And that's why I remember when my dad died, we were living in Madison, but we had just visited up here maybe about a week to 10 days prior. And the last words I said to my dad in person were, "I love you." And so when you look at that, you had, with my dad, everything was in right order. You know what I mean? When he passed away.
Was that sudden that you weren't expecting it, or was he sick?
Yeah, it was a heart attack. And he hadn't had a heart attack before, and he was working. It was something that occurred, I think it was like 3 or 4 in the morning.
Oh my goodness.
So it was a case where it was sudden. So in that case, you know, if you're in right relationship with people around you, and I think that's one of the things that you never know when you're going to go.
No.
So if you have a disagreement, or if you're not in a good place with those that are close to you, you know, it's an example of, you know, you better think that it might make sense to hold a grudge, or to be bitter, or to let things go unresolved, because you never know when either you or the other person, you know, might not be around.
And you learned that pretty early on in your life. How old are you when your dad passed?
I was 31 years old.
Yeah, wow. 31 years. Yeah, that is really young. And is that something that you learned about through that process of like not holding on to things and making sure you're in a good place? Or is that something you really realized within your own situation?
I think it was something that I think I was just thankful that, you know, that when that happened. I mean, I always, you know, with my parents and even my siblings, we've always had really good relationships. We've never been estranged from one another.
Right.
And you see examples of other families where, you know, something will split the family and someone's upset with someone else and they make amends. So I think I've been fortunate, especially when I looked at my mother's family and how close they were and how they dealt with tragedy within their family. It wasn't even a model. It was basically more ingrained that, you know, your family is important, your siblings are important. It's important that you keep, you know, you have strong relationships. And it's important that you don't let little stuff, and most of the stuff that splits people and families apart are just little things, little minor things that, you know, most of us, you know, we just have to learn to blow things off. So I think that's, you know, part of it is that I've always, you know, had a great relationship with my parents and my siblings. And now I feel that I have a great relationship with my wife and my children. Mm-hmm. But I think that applies again, Morgan, regardless of if you're diagnosed with an illness that will more in most cases lead to your demise, or if you get hit by a car. Or die of a heart attack suddenly. And you're making sure that you're in right relationship with people, and also right relationship with God. And I think that gets back to that faith issue, that you know, heaven forbid that you're not in right relationship with God, because you know that next life might not be that great.
Right. How am I trying to say this? So like, obviously we don't know when we're going to go. In most cases, it could be any time really, but knowing that you have this illness and having that news, how has that affected you, and how have you kind of dealt with knowing that that's like kind of on the top of mind now? Like you could still go a different way, obviously, but it, knowing that that is could be the reason, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't buy, let me see. There was a joke where, one nice thing is that when people are hounding you to buy insurance from them, life insurance,
yeah,
all you have to say the magic word cancer, and then they just stop hounding you. in one way, you know, it really reduces the number of decisions you have to make. As I joke with people, I'm tending not to make really long-term commitments because I just might not be around to fulfill them. But one of the things that, you know, you also do is you look at trying to get things in order, you know. So first it was the relationship thing, which was most important. But then all the other stuff, you know, making sure all your financial records are in order, making sure all your life insurance policies are easily accessible and everything's updated on that. Making sure that, you know, you have, you know, a will and, you know, even the medical power of attorney in place. And we're working on some of the stuff we've done, some of the stuff I'm still working on. But making sure all that little stuff is in order, even down to you know, funeral plans. You know, so it's like the stuff that you kind of go through to say, right. Okay,
do you want to have like part in knowing what your funeral is going to be like? Do you have wishes for that, or is that hard for you to talk about at all, or is that just kind of how it is?
Well, with COVID now, it's, you know, if I were to croak in the, well, we're under this.
We talked about that a few weeks ago.
Don't have to worry about it. We'll have a drive-by funeral.
I know. I was like, I remember when we talked about it a few weeks ago when I was FaceTiming it, Sarah. I was like, do you want us to drive by and like honk for you? Doing that with like celebrate like graduations and things now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's, so yeah, I mean, you can, you know, ultimately, you know, in the Catholic Church, the funeral mass is really for the person that's died. It's really not for the people in the audience. So it's really the purpose of the mass is to offer sacrifice you know, for that person that has died, the person that's either in the urn or the person laying in the casket at the mass. So it's, you know, it's not really a celebration of life, although the mass itself is a celebration. Every mass we have is a celebration. But it's really for this person and, you know, helping that person on that next part of their journey. And so I can plan all I want. But like I joke with that, sure. But she has the option of changing everything.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's not, right now it's not that hard. But again, it's not hard for me. I think it's harder for her than it is for me. But, you know, trying to get the house in order so that when you do go, you know, when you do go, you know, the people that you leave behind aren't scrambling to deal with stuff. And sometimes, like I said, you might think that your house is in order, and then an accident happened. I just remember when my dad passed away, and I was helping my mom go through things because my dad wasn't expecting to die when he left home at 11 o'clock at night on a 11 o'clock on a Friday night to go to work. He wasn't expecting to die, and then when we went through stuff, we found out that, you know, even their house that they were in, that the, when they purchased the house, the deed was never recorded back in 1960 or 61. They did all the things right. I mean, at that time you had tax stamps. So they had the deed, they had the tax stamps. So it was a relatively easy process, an easy process to do. But it was one of those things that you just said, my gosh, is my title for my house, is that in order, and things like that. So it's, you know, it's a little stuff that you want to have in order, right, regardless. But I think when you come up with the diagnosis, again, you have quote unquote the luxury of knowing that, hey, you know what? I might not have many days left. So I got to get off my duff and start to get some of this stuff organized.
Yeah. And what, having gone through grief and losing people close to you, your dad, your good friend, Ron King, who's more like family to all of us, but having gone through experiences like that, like losing people in your life and seeing how people grieve, is there any hopes that you have for your family when the day comes that you pass away and they're grieving?
Well, I think the one thing is that in the two cases that you mentioned, my dad and Ron King, you know, those both men were just great men. They lived their lives well. They were role models, hard workers. And so when they passed, it made it a little bit easier, because in one case it made it hard because they were good people, and as that song by Billy Joel says, only the good die young. But they were relatively young, but you knew that your image of these folks and your memories of these folks were going to be really, really positive. That they, again, they were just, because they were good people, and you have good memories. And I think that's it. When I die, I would like for people to say that, you know, that I was a good husband, a good father, a good son, a good brother, a good uncle, a good grandpa, and, you know, a good man. And
I
think
I can tell you right now, they're going to be saying all of those things.
Yeah, until they get to know me, and then the worst will come out. But, and I think that's it, that I, you know, that with all my faults and all my sins, that I tried to do the best I could. And I, you know, I was a decent human being.
And so you're hoping
that we'll
focus on those things to help them, then?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Are those the things that have helped you through grief before, is focusing on the good and the good memories that you've had with those people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's been it.
Yeah.
You know, you always have that sense of loss, and that'll always be there. But I think that's focusing. And unfortunately, you know, when people close to me have passed away, again, when they passed, my relationship with them was always in a good spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it. If you have, you know, if there's hurt, if there's any sort of conflict, you know, trying to get that resolved.
Yeah.
So that when you do leave, you're not leaving with someone who says, oh my gosh, I wish I could have said this. I wish I could have made up. I wish I could have,
right,
you know, made amends and things like that.
Luckily you have been able to do a ton of like traveling and sailing, which you love, and just spending time with family and friends. And I know you'd mentioned that there are a lot of things that you feel like you probably wouldn't have been able to do if this hadn't happened. But is that sense of adventure and exploration that you have something you've always had, or has that kind of happened through this process of being told this diagnosis?
You know, I don't... Well, I wouldn't even consider it a sense of adventure. I think it's been being fortunate to take advantage of opportunities when the opportunities have manifested themselves. And I look at my life where I've been lucky to be able to go away to college. You know, going from Superior to Washington, D.C., pretty significant culture shock.
Right.
But I was able to do that and take advantage of some other things that while I was in college. So I think, I don't know, a sense of adventure, because I'm not like a person who wants to go mountain climbing, cliff climbing.
Right, but going on sailing
trips. I'm afraid of heights.
But sailing, big sailing trips alone, mm-hmm. even, and that's, and on Lake Superior, which those waters can be pretty vicious. And so that seems like a big adventure to me from mm-hmm. the outside. And so that's why I thought of you as someone who is very adventurous, because you can do things like that where I would never trust my ability to go on Lake Superior alone. And so is that just something you really enjoy and you've learned over time?
Well, like I said before, alcohol. Alcohol makes alcohol makes women look better and men braver. No, I've enjoyed it, and I like, and I'm not, you know. And again, when you do anything, you have to use your head. And there have been situations where I've been in situations where I probably shouldn't have been there, where I really didn't think too far ahead. But if I thought too far ahead, and if I weighed all the negatives and the dangers, I probably wouldn't leave my house.
Right.
You know, so anyways, you have to have faith in yourselves and faith in people, that people are inherently good. And you have to use common sense. So, but I wouldn't say I'm an overly adventurous type of guy.
No.
But I've been able to have opportunities, and I've been fortunate enough to take advantage of those opportunities.
So is that just like when you're hearing this news, a lot of, like you talked before, a lot of people could take it so many different ways. They can be afraid to go do things. They can take on new opportunities. And so has it just always been your kind of personality, to look at life in that way of how can I find the positive in it, and how can I take advantage of the opportunities I do have?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think part of it's that way. And I think sometimes, and it's funny because my approach to life hasn't been sort of optimistic and bubbly. It's been sort of minimizing the negative things. So it's not necessarily extolling or expanding on the positive, but it's been to try to minimize the negative. So the joke was, you know, is the glass half full or half empty? I always thought that the best answer was, well, it's only half empty. It's only half empty as opposed to half full, because I always thought half full was, God, that means the glass is only half full.
Right.
I'd rather have it be only half empty.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not totally empty. So it's sort of like backwards, and that might just be me too. I'm somewhat backwards. But yeah, I think it's getting back to, it's also, you know, the old bumper sticker. I don't know if they still have them around, where, you know, shit happens.
Yeah.
You know, so stuff happens, just deal with it. And I think that's part of it too. But again, you can't use that and apply that sort of attitude to everyone, because everyone's in a different situation. Mm-hmm. So for some people who can let stuff roll off their shoulders, you know, stuff happens, get over it, they might be able to do that, but other people aren't necessarily in that spot. Doesn't mean that one person's better than the other person. It's that we're all in different situations, and we're all in different situations. We're not in the same position to respond to things in the exact same way. And that we have to respect how people respond, even though their responses might be totally different,
right,
than the response that you think you would have. And I think that's one thing that I've learned through this too, is that there's no one way of dealing with, you know, having cancer or having really any sort of diagnosis. There's no one way, there's no one right way of dealing with it. Is that we're all going to deal as individuals, we're all going to deal with it differently. And as people who are looking at it from the outside, we got to respect that. And we got to, I think we have to respect that. We also have to have an attitude where the person who's going through it might not want help. Even though people are really quick and you really appreciate the fact that people are so ready to offer advice, you know, everything in regards to treatments, in regards to, you know, dealing with side effects and things like that, that sometimes you just, as a person looking at it from the outside, you just need to back away and just basically ask someone, how you doing? Is there anything you need from me? If there's anything that I can do to help, let me know. And I think that's probably more valuable than outright offering advice or even right. telling someone, wow, you look great. You know, that was a joke too. Yeah, you look great. Wow, you look great. And it's just like, yeah, but inside I feel like shit.
Yeah, and so just ask me how I'm doing and not comment on what
I look like. But I mean, I did the same thing. It's funny, Morgan, you know, and before this diagnosis, I would do the same thing. And then I think part of it was reading about other people who've had cancer, and when people would come up and either, you know, offer unsolicited advice or even say, you look great, you know, these folks would say, yeah, maybe that's not the right thing to say. And it's not kind of criticizing and demeaning the people because they're well-meaning. But I think what it is, it becomes more of a self-reflection now. Okay, now I know when I encounter someone that might be going through something, not to assume I know what they're going through, and B, being there more to listen,
right,
as opposed to talk, to more to offer any assistance, okay, as opposed to giving unsolicited advice. So I think that's one of the things that I've learned through this too.
It's so hard to know what to do. I mean, even asking you to be on this podcast with me, I was so nervous because I didn't know how you were going to take it. Me asking that, I didn't know how to really ask if you'd be comfortable, because you have always seemed like a very private person, and I didn't know if you're going to be open to it. And so I feel like for a lot of people on the outside of it, they just really don't know what to say that's going to make you feel comfortable or okay. And so that's really great advice to hear, that just asking how the person's doing can really go a long way, instead of just saying advice or saying you look great. It's good to know that just like asking what you can do or how they're doing can really help.
As Grandpa Bob would say it with money.
I love Grandpa Bob.
You want to make me feel good, say it with money.
Is there,
in regard to being nervous, Morgan, you were nervous before you asked me to do this. Wait till you get my invoice, then you're really
oh, I didn't know that I was being charged.
Oh, my agent should have told you that.
I would never ask Grandpa Bob to do anything like this, because there's always a deal with him.
No, he has the same agent. He has the same agent. He has the same agent as I do.
Oh, is that true, Aunt Sarah?
Yeah, she's upstairs. I'll go get her now. She, in fact, right now I can hear her on the keyboard. She must be preparing the invoice.
Did you you use humor a lot, especially when talking about what you're going through, and has that helped you kind of feel more comfortable talking about it with people or coping with it? Or is, you're always been a humorous guy, so is it just your personality?
No, it's the humor is just to mask my ignorance. Because I've learned early in life that it's a lot harder to dazzle people with intelligence. It's easier to baffle them with BS.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And that's really my credo, Morgan. That's my credo, is if you can't be intelligent, try to humor them, and that acts like a diversion.
If you can't humor them and you can't be intelligent, what do you do?
Good question.
You're like, I don't know. I just figured out the humor part of it.
Very good. I don't know. Oh, then you just, you stand there quiet and you act like you know what's going on. And that's probably the most intelligent thing to do. And I wish I would have learned that lesson early in life, to keep my pie hole shut and just sit there and look like I know what's going on.
Are there any other things in life that you, like, now being where you are at, looking back, wish you would have known for a younger you?
Things that I wish I would have done differently?
Done differently, or lessons or ways to go about navigating life?
Mm-hmm. No, I there's nothing, you know, nothing that I look back that I say, you know, I would have done over. I mean, of course, I mean, you look back through some of the rougher times, but I think everything helps to build character. So challenges, failures, you know, they build more character than I think successes do. I think looking back, are there things that, you know, I wish I would have done differently? No, I think, though, as you mentioned before, after the diagnosis, I've been able to spend more time on the important stuff, making sure that my faith life is in order, and also making sure that my relationships with the people that are close to me, that those relationships are in order.
Mm-hmm.
And that, as part of that, trying to spend more time with them. And you were mentioning before about, you know, the impact of having to do the shelter in place because of COVID-19.
Yeah. How is that affecting you now? Because you
really it's hard. I think it's hard. I mean, you can see people from a distance, but, you know, we had our daughter, our daughter and son-in-law and grandson were at our cabin this weekend, and I couldn't hug them, you know, and so, you know, you're spending, you can't hug, you can't have that physical contact. And I think that makes it difficult. It makes it difficult for a 5-year-old grandson, but, you know, you just deal with it. And I think, yeah, and the other thing is you just can't go out and hang with people. You're doing it.
And you were supposed to be traveling during this time too. And obviously now it's not a good time for anyone really to be traveling, but for someone who wants to take the opportunities they can while they can, mm-hmm. Has that been hard for you to really be able to face that and be like, oh, now I have to be home? Or has it been really disappointing for you?
No, I think it's been okay, because I had the opportunity to travel for about a month, and then I had this multi-leg kind of adventure, and I was able to get through one of the legs, and partway through the second leg, I had to be hospitalized, but then your Aunt Sarah came down, and we were able to kind of make a little detour and do some other things and head back up here. And I think that worked pretty well. We were on our way back. Well, you know, the COVID stuff was starting, but before it really started to hit.
Yeah.
And so when we got up here, we still had time before, you know, the social distancing stuff really, really happened. So I think coming back, I came back at the right time. And I, you know, so being home is probably, except for the weather, it's a good time to be back.
Yeah.
You know, now's the time to get ready for our summer stuff whenever summer comes along.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, so I think it's, you know, so far it hasn't, I haven't been disappointed that I haven't been able to travel. I think right now it's, it's looking forward to some of the other things that we do around here when the weather's warm. And a lot of those activities, you know, I can do and not violate any of the social distancing rules.
What is the first thing you want to do when you are free to leave your house? And this is a question I would ask anyone because everyone's at home right now.
I'm getting anxious to, again, it's, and I could do it now, but it's just the weather. I'm getting anxious to do some work outside and to start to look at getting my sailboat ready to put in the water. So those are kind of the things that I'm looking at. But again, it's the social distancing. That stuff really doesn't have anything to do with it. It's more of just waiting for the weather to change, the weather to get warm.
Have you been nervous at all about getting COVID-19 and having that affect you at all? Or have you
been? Morgan, I have stage 4 cancer.
You're
I'm
like,
nervous about anything anymore.
This scares you?
No, I think cancer is probably more concerned. I kind of blow it off, but I do. I mean, I do take precautions.
Yeah.
I know. And you know what?
Oh, go ahead.
But yeah, with sort of when you're in a compromised state, I'm at a much higher risk, but I think if, you know, I try to be smart and I try to limit my exposure or, yeah, being exposed to other people. But yeah, it doesn't, even when I go out, that's not the first thing on my mind. I'm not paranoid. I'm not overly vigilant. I try to be somewhat vigilant. So yeah, it's not
a real
thing. I don't wake up in the morning saying, oh my God, I have cancer. And I don't wake up saying, oh my God, there's COVID-19 out there. So those aren't top of mind things for me.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. I'm glad that you're at a good place.
How about you?
How am I doing being at home?
Yeah, with the COVID-19 stuff. Does it scare the bejesus out of you?
I'm not really scared about it. I am glad that I'm not traveling anymore for work. I took a leave. So I'm excited that I get that it's happening during this time of year because now I get my summer off. And so mm-hmm. I'll get to really hang out with everyone because during our summer month, usually at work, it's our busiest time. So like I won't, be able to do weekends or anything like that because I'm pretty low on the totem pole. So I'm looking forward to having the time. So I'm trying to find positivity in that, but it's been hard. I feel like on relationships, like just being with Sean at home 24/7, cause he's working from home now. And then I'm here. And I've just talked to other friends and that seems to be the hardest thing is just like trying to find time for yourself when there's really no place you can go to get away from the people you live with. But also grateful to have that time with the people in your life that are at home with you. So it's like, I'm really glad I get to have this time and making memories at home with Sean and our puppy, but also like I need some time to myself.
Right.
Has it been, how I know it, Aunt Sarah has put you to work as her personal chef while she's been at home.
Mm-hmm.
What have you really been enjoying cooking up for her in the kitchen?
Well, I'm not only personal chef, life coach. she doesn't admit that I'm her life coach. Or will she take my advice? Maybe that's why she won't admit it. I'm just cooking. I look what's in the freezer. That's the other nice thing about this is that we haven't gone out to eat. We've only ordered out twice for takeout.
Where are your places for takeout?
I've been going to, and this is, now I get paid for this too. Golden Inn.
I love Golden Inn. They were closed for a little while when this first started and Sean and I were so sad. And then They recently opened up again for takeout orders, and we ordered last week, and we were like reading the comments when they posted about how they're opening up again, and people were writing like, there is a God, like that's definitely the place to go for Chinese in town.
Remember, Golden Inn, conveniently located, kitty corner from the Superior Sewage Plant, and right across the street from the Superior Animal Hospital. It don't get any fresher than Golden Inn.
You really aren't selling them correctly. I don't know if they're going to keep you as...
I think that'll work. I got it. Now, that's what you and Sean are in. You guys did marketing classes and marketing stuff. I think we got their brand. I think that's it.
The animal hospital right across the street and the, what was it, sewage plant, you said, down the road?
But no, so we haven't gone out. So anyway, so it forces us to look at stuff in the freezer and say, okay, well, yeah, we better cook this up. So really what I've done is I just look at what we have and then kind of either go through a recipe book or just Google something online and figure it out. And then
I think hopefully, they have a website where you can put in the things that you do have and then they give you recipes based off of those ingredients.
Well, that's kind of cool.
You should check that out.
Yeah.
They also do that with drinks.
Yeah. Well, I got like four. I got four cocktail books up here, so I think I'm pretty well suited.
So when are you going to put your boat in the water this year?
Well, the good news is we got the dock in the water on Sunday at the cabin. Once the ice shifted away from our property, in regard to the sailboat. I was hoping by the end of this month. That was my initial hope. But with the weather, it looks like it's probably going to be early to mid-May.
Do you think you'll go on a solo sailing trip again this year?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I'm trying to figure out where to go, what to do, and everything kind of. It'll probably, I try to work around my treatments. And then my doctor schedules the treatments around my adventures. So it's kind of a nice setup. So I have some flexibility. So I think what it'll be is just trying to figure out. Pardon?
It sounds like you have a pretty good relationship with your doctor.
Yeah, it's Dr. Dan Nikovich. He's fantastic. And I've been fortunate. I was fortunate to have him as my oncologist. And it's been great. So we've been able to, you know, his big concern, you know, when I go on a trip, it is what happens if you get sick? What are you going to do? And so when I explain it to you, and then he knows enough about, well, if you're up in Isle Royale, how far are you? What's the nearest place? Thunder Bay. But how long does that take? Okay. But okay. And you know what to do if you get sick. Yep. So he's been real good and real understanding.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'd like to take a few sailing trips. And I was supposed to have a couple of weddings to go to.
I know Al and Sarah. I wonder if that's going to be happening. I was supposed to go to that wedding too.
And you know what? I really don't like going to. I shouldn't say this because people will be listening. But graduation parties. I'm really upset that I'll be missing just loads of graduation parties because there's nothing I'd rather do on a beautiful Saturday here in the Northland than spend it. At a graduation party.
Now, you have a nephew that's graduating this year.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I would not miss his party. And even if we can't have a party, I'm going to go to it, even if they don't have one.
Well, do you have any other like tips or resources for people who might be going through a similar thing that you are, or tips for family members or advice? Who are going through it with their loved ones? Is there any resources or books or anything that have really helped you guys?
Well, the first one is that when you order from Golden Inn, get the wontons as opposed to the wings. That's what my one piece of advice would be. Excellent wontons. I'm not a big wing fan. Okay, but seriously, in regards to books, there are the one book, and it's the one author, Atul Gawande, who's a physician, and he was also a Harvard professor, and he wrote for, Atlantic, but he would also be on National Public Radio. He wrote a book called Being Mortal, and I think that's a great book for people who are going through any sort of serious medical condition or end of life situation. I think not only for those folks going through it, but also for their family members. It really, and also for physicians that are treating people. It really changes the discussion about treatment from one of treating to solve a problem to looking at a treatment program that enables the person who's being treated to have the best, as many good days in their lives with the remaining time that they have as possible.
Right.
So it's a really, really good book. And I think your Aunt Sarah and I read that book, and we also listened to the author on podcast. And that has been an amazing book. And what was really good about, what was somewhat coincidental, but I think it took a lot, is that when I asked my physician if he read the book, he goes, yeah, I read that book and the three other books that he wrote. And my physician and some of the other folks who are providing treatment are in the same camp. It's not about solving a problem. It's more about getting the person that they're treating as many good days as possible.
I really like that perspective. Well, I really appreciate you talking with me. There's so many things that I really didn't know about, and I'm really glad that I got this opportunity to talk with you and learn more about what you've been going through and how you've been dealing with it.
Thank you, Morgan, and good luck with this project. And I look forward to being able to sail with you guys as soon as they lift the social distancing ban. And we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you, Uncle Andy.